Okay, so welcome everyone. My name's Bhante Sujata, and some of you already I know, some of you I will get to know over the next week, some of you will probably remain a mystery. So we've come together to do some metta meditation, some loving kindness meditation. And first, I would like to say congratulations to everybody for being here. And I know that everyone has given up a lot, relinquished a lot to be able to be here. It's not an easy thing to do. And I hope you're all looking forward to the next week's meditation as much as I am. Usually when you start out doing a retreat, there's a kind of mixed feeling of on the one hand really wanting to do the meditation and so on the other hand being a bit nervous because you know it's going to involve some pain and discomfort. So there's a kind of mixed feeling, and then when you finish the retreat there's another mixed feeling because you also feel kind of excited because the retreat's finishing, but also kind of you're kind of nervous because you don't know what's going to happen afterwards, whether you'll be able to keep your practice going. So that's just the nature of the mind, isn't it? Now, for this retreat, I'm not going to give very much of a Dhamma talk this evening. This is just more or less just welcoming and saying hello. Bianca's already gone over the housekeeping details with you. And so for now, for myself, I'd just like to personally express my gratitude to the Buddhist Society of WA, all of the wonderful volunteers, including Bianca, Dania, Mike and others. So many people who have worked together to make this retreat possible. And I think it's important at the beginning of the retreat to acknowledge this, as well, of course, as the vision and tireless energy of Ajahn Brahm and other Sangha members to make it possible. And all during the week, in the rain and the cold, Ajahn Brahm and the other monks have been working on the roofs of the unfinished buildings to try to make the retreat centre as good as possible. So I really appreciate this incredible devotion and work that's been done by so many people. And it's so important to remember that the Eightfold Path that the Buddha practiced is not just meditation, yeah? It's not just what you do on your cushion. It's everything else. We look around us and there's bricks, there's doors, there's lights. All of these things, somebody had to think of it. Somebody had to pay for it. Somebody had to put it in its place. All of that energy and that effort that's required so that we can be here. I was just speaking with one of the monks about the dana and the support for the retreats. And as you know, through the extraordinary generosity of many people that the BSWA has been able to make these retreats available for free, and so much is offered for the Sangha and so on, and so much that's able to be used to help support the retreatants, and that's done for a very good reason, and that's because purifying the mind, expanding our consciousness, learning to be more aware. This is, in fact, I believe, the greatest and the highest thing that any human being can strive to achieve. And so the fact that there are so many people willing to help this is an acknowledgement that we are actually here to do something very profound and something that should not be underestimated. Most people in our lives we go through from birth to death without really thinking about it or reflecting on it very much. You all know the story of the life of the Buddha, and the Buddha was born. And when he was born, actually, the texts tell us that there were all of these miracles and so on that happened there. But to me, those miracles are not very important. What's really important is the simple fact that the Buddha was born. He aged. He died. And in his birth, his aging and his death, he was much like you and I. Not too much different. But the one thing that he did do that was really astonishing and really revolutionary, in the middle he woke up. And so for so many of us, we're born in darkness, we grow old in darkness, and we die in darkness. And surely the most wonderful and valuable thing that we can do in our lives is to find that light, find that wisdom, find that ability to understand ourselves. This is what the practice of meditation promises us. Now, just a few points of detail. Now, many of you, I'm sure most of you know that for this retreat, I've been together with a friend of mine, a student of mine in Sydney. We've organised to conduct a survey of loving kindness meditation. Actually, just a few, many of you have already filled out the forms for this, so thank you very much for those who've done that. And just I'd like to give a couple of words of encouragement for people who may be considering it or doubting whether they'd like to do it, but just to let you know, I really would appreciate it. Of course, it's everybody's choice whether they want to fill it in, but it is really helpful. It's not so much helpful for you and I. We already know that meditation's a good thing. We're already here. That's not for us. It's for people who don't really know whether it's a good thing and who want to inquire about it. And especially, we're hoping that the results of this and other surveys, we did another survey earlier in the year at another retreat, and we plan to do more in future retreats, and we hope that this will be put together into peer-reviewed articles. And once it's in the peer-reviewed literature, then it can be very useful. For example, if people want to introduce meditation into schools, into hospitals, into prisons, and these kinds of contexts, and then they can point to the literature and say, well, this is something which actually has some substance to it. It's not just a kind of kooky Asian cult. Okay, so if you haven't filled in the form, there's still plenty of time and there's still more forms available near the front desk. Just to remind you, I'm sure most of you know already, but just to remind you that when you do fill them in, please remember your code number. And when you fill in one form at the beginning, you're given a code number, and when you do the subsequent forms, one at the end of the retreat and one in 2 weeks' time, will be emailed to you, and you'll need to put the same code number on that form, and that way we can track who's the same individuals, but without knowing your names. So we don't know, there's no connection between the data and your personal details, so that your privacy will be guaranteed for that reason. And also, I also hope that just the act of doing the forms and filling them in might be useful as well. And speaking to some people on the last retreat, they actually found it quite a nice thing to do, to help reflect for oneself and to see what the how one's state of mind has changed during the retreat. So it's not a bad thing to do. Now, you will find around the place some schedules for the retreat, which give times for getting up in the morning and walking and sitting meditation. I understand that it's the custom on the BSWA retreats to immediately ignore all of those instructions, or at least for Ajahn Brahm. So please feel free to ignore anything, except, of course, for keeping the precepts and so on. Now, in terms of the getting up in the morning and these kinds of things, I would like to encourage you all tomorrow morning to please don't get up at 4 o'clock, unless you really have to, but please have a good rest and a sleep in, because I know most of you have come from work and be tired, so make sure you get enough sleep, especially the first day or two. Otherwise, you'll just be fighting sloth and torpor for the whole retreat, and that doesn't do anybody any good. So make sure you get plenty of rest. And then as the retreat goes on, normally you'll find that your mind gets naturally brighter and that you won't need so much sleep. Yeah. So just let that follow its own nature. Don't be forcing it. On the schedule, it talks about times for sitting and walking meditation. Don't worry about that. Just sit and walk according to how you feel, what your preference is. I'll give some instruction on walking meditation tomorrow. But the kind of balance, doing both sitting and walking meditation is good. It's much better than doing either one alone. But finding the right balance is something which is very individual. Some people like to do a lot of walking meditation, and some people like to do more sitting meditation. As a very, very rough generalization, I might suggest that at the beginning of the retreat, you might consider doing more walking meditation. And this is something, a practice that I developed during my retreats, was that I would start out by doing mostly walking meditation and keep on persisting with the walking meditation until I felt quite confident about establishing the mindfulness in the walking meditation. And from there I would go and start doing the sitting and find that the sitting would proceed much more smoothly and much more easily because of that. So the times for coming out for meditation and so on, these just take these as guidelines. But if for whatever reason, whether you're tired or you just want to have a break or whatever, you miss any session, then please don't worry about it. Okay? Sometimes you might just want to go for a walk through the bush or whatever. And also important for everyone to just not be judging and comparing with everybody else. Okay? The reason we're here together as a group is only so that we can help support each other, that's all. Nobody wishes any ill will, nobody wishes any harm to anyone here, okay? We're very peculiar people, okay, Buddhist meditators, right? Our idea of a good time is to come together with a lot of other people and just sit there completely silent and not say anything. Yeah? It's very strange. So, it's one thing I didn't ask. I'm not sure what the normal rules for keeping silence and so on in these retreats are. But as far as I'm concerned, if you a bit of chat this evening and tomorrow morning at breakfast time, I think is fine. But after breakfast time tomorrow, then please do make an effort to keep the silence, and especially in your rooms and so on, to make it out of respect for others. One thing that you are allowed to judge others on, and I give you permission to do this, if somebody falls asleep in the meditation room and is snoring, then if they're near you, then please give them a poke out of compassion for everybody else who's trying to meditate in the room. But just remember this. We have this very, very very, very fundamental kind of need or capacity to judge. Yeah, this is one of the things when we're very finely tuned. I think it's an evolutionary thing. I think if you're like a caveman in the wild, you have to very quickly decide, is this a tiger or a deer? Yeah, and if it's a tiger, that makes the difference between having dinner and being dinner, doesn't it? Yeah, and you have to decide very, very quickly. Yeah, and if you don't decide, you've missed out. I saw a study that was done on that last year, and they got a bunch of men, and they asked them, when you see a woman, are you interested in sex or are you interested in a meaningful relationship? Okay, and they got them to fill out the answers. And then they got their photograph, and then they showed their photographs to a bunch of women, and they just showed them just for a second. Okay, and they asked the women, is this man interested in sex or is he interested in a meaningful relationship? And that women had to put down what their impression was after seeing their face for just 1 second. And they got it right. Yeah? They knew. So there's bad news for all the guys here. You're not fooling anyone. All right? But it goes to show, doesn't it? You know, that's how fast that we that recognition and that judgment kicks in. Yeah? So we can't stop that. Right? And if our mindfulness is very, very sharp, we can stop that. We can get in between that. But normally we can't stop it. But what we can stop is building up the story about it. We can stop building up the narrative about it. Now, in this for this first day, from now until the Dhamma talk tomorrow evening, I don't want you to do metta meditation. I don't want you to do loving kindness meditation. I want you to just practice with mindfulness. Okay? Many of you, I know most of you, have already meditated before. So if you've done some kind of mindfulness meditation, I don't care what kind, but just do whatever that is. If you've done maybe Zazen meditation in Zen or Mahasi technique, or if you've done, for example, Ajahn Brahm's mindful awareness of the present moment, and so on. Just any one of those techniques, just to be aware, okay? And try to maintain that in the sitting meditation, walking meditation, eating meditation, going to the toilet meditation, and so on. Just remember those instructions in the Satipatthana Sutta. Yeah? Walking, standing, sitting, lying down, going to sleep, waking up. Just be mindful. That's all. So we have a perfect opportunity on this retreat to slow down, not be distracted, not be worried about things. You don't have to worry about anything. You don't have to solve any problems. Just practice to be aware. Don't worry about what anybody else is thinking. Yeah, you can just, if you want to do things very slowly, you can. Yeah, usually in the forest tradition, in the Thai forest tradition, they practice with a more kind of natural mindfulness. So you just do things at the ordinary speed and so on. But it can be quite useful to practice with really slowing down for periods of time. And you just try that, you know, if you're having a cup of tea. Yeah, it can be a bit annoying if you're doing it while you're collecting your food or something like that. So be so don't do it in a way that's going to annoy everybody else. Okay? It was slow. Or while you're having a shower, for example. No, have a shower at ordinary speed. But just use it as a training, yeah? Doing something like having a cup of tea, yeah? Just train yourself. Just very slowly. Have a sip. And put it down. You don't have anything else to do. You don't have any trains to catch. You don't have any deadlines to meet. You don't have any bosses over your shoulder yelling at you. Nothing. All we're here to do is that one thing, to be mindful, to develop our meditation. Just that one thing. So for the next 24 hours, let's see if we can just develop that one thing. Only that. Now, when we're doing that practice, we try to be mindful of everything, the thoughts, physical posture, and so on. But especially when we're doing metta, especially to be mindful of any emotion that we have that's on that side of anger, anything that's on that negative side, any critical thoughts, any feelings of jealousy, any annoyance or like a sense of impatience, yeah? Anything that's on that side of the emotional spectrum, just particularly pay attention to that. Don't try to do anything about it. Just be aware, okay, for now. Okay, for now. Just use the power of awareness. Oh, okay, that's how it is. And to see how it feels, see how it makes you feel. Sometimes with the different emotional states and things that we have, there's more to it. Sometimes we need to sort of get in there, get involved and work with it more, okay? But for now, we're not going to do that. For now, we're just going to just be aware and see what happens. Often, that's enough. Okay, so often we can just be aware and then after a while it'll go away and that's all we need to do. Okay? If not, perhaps we need to do some more things, and we'll talk about some of those later on in the retreat. So for the next 24 hours, just practice with mindfulness. Just that much. Now, in the schedule for the retreat, I think it has I'll be giving the main talk, main teaching in the evening at this time at 8 o'clock. I also believe it's on the schedule, it has another teaching at 8 a.m. after breakfast. Okay, so at the 8 a.m. Teaching, I won't be giving so much. I'll be giving a few bits and pieces of practical advice there, but the main teaching will be in the evening. But if you can be for both of those sessions. In addition to that, there's a schedule for a roster for interviews. Okay, and now the roster for interviews is I've put up on the in the front entrance, near where the entrance to the kitchen is, near where you filled out the forms for the psych study. Now, the interviews for tomorrow are left blank, so you can fill your name in there if you like. Okay, so that's for anybody who wants to volunteer to have an interview tomorrow. For Sunday, Monday, and half of Tuesday, I've put in, hopefully, I think everybody's names. Okay, so I want you all to come for at least one interview. All right? Basically, I just want to make sure that I meet everybody who's on the retreat, get some feedback from them, and just be confident. I want to be confident in myself that everybody understands what they're doing when they're meditating and is not sort of going off on the wrong path. That's why I want everyone to come for at least one interview. So please check the list there for the Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, and see when your name is there. And please come to that interview. If your name is not mentioned there, if I've missed it out, then please just write it in one of the blank spaces, and we'll do that. After everyone's done their one interview, then the rest of the retreat also is left blank. So if you want to have extra interviews, then please put your name down, and you can have some more interviews if you'd like. And when you do put your name down, please. Just put your name down in the slot after the previous person. Yeah, so it's not like one person at 8 a.m. and another person at 9 a.m. or something like that. So just put them next to each other. So that's just keep that organized. So those interviews will be quite short. That's a 10-minute interview. And they're just held in the kind of the open area there. So they're held in a kind of a public area. Now, if you'd like to have a longer interview, or if you'd like to have an interview in a more private setting for some reason, then please let me know and we can try to organise that. Just be aware that if we do have a private interview, we'll have to arrange to have a chaperone present. Okay? But if you'd like to do that, then please just talk to me and we can arrange something for that. Oh, and for when you're coming for the interviews, generally speaking, what I'm looking for when I speak to people in the interviews is I'm looking for how somebody understands the meditation, what they're doing, and how they're responding to it. I want to know what's actually happening with you during the meditation. I don't care whether it's good or bad or indifferent. That doesn't really matter. What matters to me is that people understand what they're doing and that they're going about it the right way. Yeah. So if you can just bear that in mind when you come for the interview, that just to try to give me, just to help me by giving me some sense of how you understand the practice, how it affects you, how you respond to the meditation. And then that helps me to be able to guide and instruct the meditation more clearly or more effectively. should mention we have a number of the Venerables also coming for the meditation. Venerable Seri, Venerable Upeka here with us this evening, and Ajahn Mayama is also coming for the retreat. As I'm sure many of you know, Ajahn Mayama is her health has been quite poor, so she's quite frail, and she hasn't been able to come in for this evening's session. Hopefully she'll pick up and be able to come for some of the talks and so on in the future. But she has asked that people respect the fact that she's here on retreat, and she's here to come and to practice and participate as best she can. So she's asked if people could not be going to her and asking questions and asking for teaching or interview or anything like that, but please just give her the respect and the space to be able to come and do her own practice and get the rest that she needs. Now we'll just pay respects to her when she is able to come for the full meeting. I think that's all I wanted to say for this evening. Are there any questions anyone has at this point in time? Yes. Good. Yes. Thank you for that. Yes, I'd like to do the chanting. We have the chanting, I think, on this. Does it say six on the schedule? Does anyone have a copy of the schedule? Yeah. Okay. At six on the schedule, and also we'll do in the evening at I think 7:50 on the schedule. So we'll do the chanting in the morning and the evening. Yeah. Thank you for that. Yeah. Yes. That's right, yeah. In the evening, I'll be giving chances for questions at both the morning and the evening sessions. Yeah. Oh, okay. If you want to do it that way, that's fine. Yes. So where is the? Just out there in the foyer. Okay. Sorry, Dania? Yes,
when would you like the questions to be brought to you, in the morning or evening?
I can have at both times, and we'll just see how we go with that. Yeah, see how many questions and so on. Yeah. Hopefully our minds will all be so still. Yes, go on. We'll see how we go with writing them down. I don't know. Normally that's what I do, is people just ask them. The only thing is maybe we can just do it both ways. Sometimes people are a bit more comfortable to write something down, especially maybe it's about their meditation experience or something, so they may be more comfortable if it's anonymous. So we can do both. We can have the questions there, and then people can ask them as well. Yeah. Yes? John? look, don't worry. I'll hopefully I'll be able to manage it. Yeah. Well, in that case, if that really is the case, then he must have answered all your questions already, surely. Well, it's good. No, it's good to have a community where people ask questions. You know, and many times I'm you know, talking and so on, and I encourage people, depending on what their cultural background are. And different people sometimes are very reluctant to ask questions. For example, when I was living in Malaysia, if you're in Penang, nobody likes to ask questions. If you're in KL, everybody likes to ask questions. Yeah? It's a cultural difference. If you're with the Sri Lankan communities, then if you're in a big group, everyone will sit there very quietly. But as soon as the group's finished, everyone's always asking a million and one questions. So it depends. Yeah. That is something that I always do really strikes me very strongly when I study the suttas is that how much of the Buddha's teachings actually are all in question and answer format. And actually almost all the Buddha's suttas are question and answer. That anything that's longer than the basic, very simple suttas, almost all of the longer ones are actually in a dialogue format. Yeah? And that shows that the Buddha was very engaging. Yeah, so it's a record. The Buddhist scriptures almost always are a record of conversations. So he wasn't so much kind of declaiming what the truth is to people, but engaging with people in things that were of importance to them. I always remember the great example where the Buddha visited one of the ashrams of one of the other sects of wanderers, and they went there, and the teacher asked the Buddha when the Buddha came, because he knew that he was a great teacher, so he asked the Buddha, please teach us your doctrine. What is it that you teach? And the Buddha said, oh, don't worry about that. Please tell me what you're teaching. Yeah, please tell me what you're doing here. And they were so amazed. They said that every other teacher comes to see us, and before we even ask them, they start telling us about all of their views and their ideas. But here the Buddha, even when he's asked, doesn't tell us, yeah, and prefers to learn what we have to teach. So to me, this is always a really wonderful example. So just to give you a bit of background on myself, as mentioned, my name is Bhante Sujato. I'm actually from Perth, born in Subiaco Hospital. My parents met in Geraldton at the Teachers College, and I grew up in Perth and went to university. I went to a number of different schools, but I did high school at Aquinas College. Went to university, studied philosophy for a couple of years, and then dropped out and went to play rock and roll instead. Then I even dropped out of playing rock and roll, which is quite an achievement, and went to Thailand, and of course, as you can see, ordained as a monk. And after practicing in Thailand and Perth for a number of years, last eight years I've been in Sydney, running Santi Forest Monastery in Bundanoon outside Sydney. The metta teaching that I'm going to be sharing with you over the next week is a meditation method that I learnt in Thailand from a monk called Ajahn Mahachatchai. And Ajahn Mahachatchai he's not a very well-known monk. He lives very quietly and very unassumingly in a little fairly ordinary monastery in Bangkok. I came to know him because when I was a young monk, a novice actually, in Thailand at Wat Manachat, I experimented a lot with a lot of different kinds of meditation. And one of the characteristics of the forest tradition is that forest tradition is very undogmatic as far as meditation goes. Yeah, so always the teachers encourage people to experiment and try different meditations. This is to me, this is a very wonderful aspect of the Thai forest tradition. And the Ajahns, if you go there and you say, I learnt, Mahasi technique or Goenka technique, or I do Anapanasati, or I do Metta, or whatever, they'll always say, yeah, that's fine, but just stay with the knowing, stay with the mindfulness. That's all that they're really concerned about, just stay with the mindfulness. Other details of the technique are not so important. I always remember the remark by Ajahn Mahabua, a great Thai forest master who passed away recently, and he was talking about his own practice, and he talked about he came, he, at one point in his practice, he had a certain problem came. I can't remember what the problem was now. It was a long time ago I read this. And he came and he tried a number of different strategies to overcome it. And eventually he found something that worked and enabled him to overcome that problem, and his meditation progressed. Later, at another time, he had the same problem came up again. So he thought, now I know what to do when this problem happens. So he did the same strategy to try and address the problem, and it didn't work. Yeah? The same problem, but the same strategy didn't work the second time. And so to me, that's always the essence of the forest tradition. It's not about a method. Yeah? It's not about a particular method. It's about using that investigation, the inquiry, the mindfulness, the understanding to know actually what is really working and what is not. And when we come from that perspective, we won't be kind of dogmatic or too attached to our meditation method. But nevertheless, the method that I'm going to be teaching, I learnt from Ajahn Chachai, and he's a very, very special monk in many ways. It's very unusual to find a monk living in Bangkok, as you know, most of the meditation monks in Thailand live in the rural districts, but he lives in Bangkok. And one of these people who seems to have had just a naturally great talent for meditation, and also somewhat unusually for Thailand. In Thailand, you usually find a kind of a bit of a split between the meditation and the scholar monks, whereas Ajahn Mahachachai is both an excellent Pali scholar and also a very talented meditator and meditation teacher. So after I started practicing as a young monk, experimenting with a lot of different methods, tried doing some metta meditation, and I really loved it. I found, I found these feelings of joy and rapture and uplift that I thought was just astonishing. I had no idea that I could actually do these things. These kind of like alien feelings. Oh my goodness, what is this? But I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't know how to develop it. And I was very lucky. There happened to be a visiting monk there, who's a very tall, thin French monk called Ajahn Tignano. Some of you may know him. He spent some time at Bodhinyana more than 10 years ago now. And Ajahn Tignano is like a walking encyclopedia of meditation methods, and he probably knows more about more different meditation teachers and systems than anybody else alive. And he had just found Ajahn Chachai, and he'd kind of grilled him on his meditation method and became a bit of an expert on it. So I was lucky to meet Ajahn Tignano and be from him be introduced to Ajahn Chachai and to practice his method. And when I started practicing, I had very good results from doing it, and I really enjoyed that practice. And so I asked Ajahn Chachai, how long do I need to keep developing this? Yeah, how long should I keep practicing this? And he just said, well, for the rest of your life. So that's what I'm doing. So this is a good point about meditation. It's not, you're not going to master it in a 9-day retreat. Yeah. You do it for the rest of your life. Yeah? If you find this way of doing metta meditation useful, good. Just keep doing it. There's nothing else to do. Just keep on developing, keep on progressing, keep on practicing. And so meditation is not like a skill which you master and you sort of get out of the way, you know, so you can go on and do other things. And meditation is like a friend. It's like a friend that you cultivate, or like a brother or sister you have beside you your whole life. Every day is a part of your life. So even though this 9-day retreat might seem like a long time, but really it's just a blip. It's just a few moments. Before we know it, the retreat will be finished. Retreats do curious things to time. I don't know if you've ever noticed that, but when you're on retreat, the moments become longer and longer and longer. Every second gets drawn out. So so much longer. But the days whiz past. Yeah. Have you ever noticed that? Yeah. Time, your perception of time is shifting. It's actually a very profound thing to notice, because you realize that what we call time actually is just a measure of our own consciousness. It's just the changes in our consciousness is what we call time. So as we meditate, we purify our consciousness. Our consciousness is changing. And so our perception of time shifts. Perception of so many things shifts. So this is the great thing about the retreat, and this is what I hope that we can all look back on in 9 days' time and get some awareness of, or some reflection about, that actually we've seen some things change. Now, we can do this method. Maybe this method will work for us. Maybe we won't. Maybe we'll succeed, or maybe we won't. We can judge ourselves by whatever way we want. But at the end of the day, at the end of the retreat, when we look back, there'll be some kind of understanding of that process. There'll be an understanding of our own minds, understanding of our own consciousness. And I hope that everybody here in this retreat will actually realize or understand at least a little bit, what is this thing that we call the mind? What is this thing that we call awareness? And when we stop, as much as possible, we stop everything outside. Stop the activity, stop the concerns, the worries, all the things that pull us out, and we come back into ourselves, into our hearts. It's almost we can't help it. We can't help becoming more aware, becoming more awake. And that process is not under our control. It's not something which you can kind of measure or set out. It's something which will happen when you least expect it. You'll turn around and suddenly there it is. And you'll realize that this mind that we can see, we can catch a glimpse of on retreat, which is so delicate and so soft. This mind we carry with us all the time, every day. It's the center of our whole life, the center of our experience, the cause of everything good and bad in our life. And yet we go through our life without knowing it, without caring about it. So that's the purpose of this retreat, is to come to an understanding, an appreciation of our mind. And hopefully it will encourage us to take better care of our minds in the future. Okay, so before we break this evening, any more questions?